You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 4th, 2022, and you've unlocked Vengeance as a playable character.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of a series built on a humanist conversation about video games. Shove those aside. We're talking about a movie today.
Well, I'm going to cram some video games into it, but here we go.
I mean, here's the fun thing, right? We're talking about Batman. We're talking about the Batman.
I was going to say the Batman.
But this is what I love about... I love talking about Batman generally. I love talking about Batman with you because you are very knowledgeable about Batman. I have a good friend, actually, Fareed. I don't know if you ever met him.
I think you've met him a couple of times.
Yeah. He just wrote a book about Batman, specifically on, like, 9/11 and all kinds of, like, you know...
He's a film academic.
I think he works in Texas. But I gotta check that book out, because Batman is a character that is, you know, it is ever-present, and there are numerous takes, and there's always something fun to say about it.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about The Batman, which is the 2022 release, also in the way that it sort of, I think in some really kind of significant ways, pays homage to some of the video games that Batman has done. And then just talk a little bit about what do we think about this version of the Batman? What can this say about the way that we approach this character in video games and what opportunities we have there? So there we go. The Batman by Matt Reeves. He's the guy that did the Planet of the Apes movies, which I think low-key are some of... You know what? I don't even have to say some of. I think the Planet of the Apes trilogy is probably the best sci-fi trilogy in the past 20 years.
Hold on. Let me do the math. Are we talking about original prequel series? Because I'll have to defend the sand soliloquy to my dying breath.
What is the sand soliloquy?
You know, sand. It's coarse and it gets everywhere.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. No. We're definitely... this surpasses that, I will gladly say, roundly. I think those movies are great. Going into The Batman, I was not that into it, though. Like, I had pretty much zero interest in watching this movie, to be honest. I feel like Batman as a character has become a... especially from DC in the recent years, a vehicle for just delivering the same kind of gritty, dark, military fantasy bullshit that we're just spoon-fed fucking constantly. And I think all of the DC Ben Affleck Batman appearances are pretty resoundingly terrible.
I do think there is the Nolan Batman is almost a victim of its own success.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it does get very... I mean, it is interesting to watch those movies cast in the lens of the Bush era. Because it just makes a lot more sense when you start thinking about it in that way.
And this is what that Batman book is about.
So. Yeah. I mean, I must be on board with Fareed, because, like, I definitely, like... having watched those movies again with some, you know, 10 years of distance or whatever, it's like, oh, whoa, like, this is definitely talking about the surveillance state and, you know, do the ends justify the means and the war on terror that shit, you know, like, it's weird. Also, I mean, like, Batman in the comic books got a little weird, you know, in terms of, like, you know, who was writing Batman and what their politics were and stuff. All that gets a little tricky sometimes.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Frank Miller is a fascist, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like he's genuinely a fascist. Yeah, definitely some weird stuff that Batman has been used in a variety of ways in the past.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was listening to My Brother, and Me, and one of them made a joke that there are more former Batmans than living presidents, than former living presidents.
Oh, you mean former different versions of Batman?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would vote for Batman to be... would I vote for Batman to be... You know what? Also, by the way, total side note, we're in the fucking worst timeline because we've got Elon Musk, multi-billionaire. He is the closest example to Bruce Wayne. But rather than fight crime as a vigilante and do good in the world, he fucking buys Twitters and just shits on people. Like, what the fuck, man?
He's like, kind of like a shitty Lex Luthor. Like, not even, you know, I guess, you know, Bezos is more of a Lex Luthor figure because he actually wants to, you know, take over space or whatever. Yeah, that's whereas Musk is just being a fucking jackass on the internet where it's like, you're not even a good supervillain.
Do you think it's only a matter of time before we get a billionaire like Musk that genuinely tries to become super heroic? You know, like working on jetpack tech or, you know, like we can't be that far off.
I mean, there are some self-styled billionaires that are like that. Like, you know, Branson, I think, I mean, Bill Gates can jump real high, or he used to be able to jump real high. That was one of his tricks.
Yeah. I'm just surprised there's not, like, people in bodysuits, you know what I mean? Like, full mecha outfits or whatever. They have the technology and the money.
I mean, depending on how Avatar 2 goes, I could see James Cameron maybe investing in that sort of tech since he clearly loves it in all of his movies.
I mean, this current version of the Batman, the Robert Pattinson Batman that we're talking about today, is closer to the Musk billionaire because he actually does not contribute to philanthropy in any meaningful way, unlike so many other versions of Bruce Wayne. So certainly the idea of rich people spending money on bullshit and not actually thinking about what they're doing and doing good in the world, I think, is a sort of theme under that. Anyway, going back to the start, were you hyped about this movie? Were you excited going into it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in... it's a modern mythology, you know? I mean, I'm as interested in a new version of Batman as I would be in a retelling of the Greek pantheon or, you know, a retelling of the Mayan King apocalypse Arthurian mythos or whatever, or you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I love that shit because it's like there are certain things throughout human history that we just retell and we put our own kind of contemporary, like whatever we're thinking about in the... you know, in our current society is reflected in the myth that we retell, and whether it's, you know, something that was from thousands of years ago, you know, whether it's, you know, the Yellow Turban Rebellion or whether it's Batman or whatever, like,
for sure,
it's just interesting to see that shit. And so, like, I'm always interested to see people take a swing at it, but I was kind of surprised because, like, we had a lot of Batman, you know, there was like the DC extended or expanded universe stuff. There were three of those Nolan movies. I mean it's just DC a lot.
Is kind of weird, right? Because we also have the Joker recently, but like, there are movies that are part of the sort of DC lore and mythos, but it feels like they're constantly coming out with like a new version. Like they're testing out different versions of these characters in different worlds. Because theoretically we could concurrently have, you know, the normal Aquaman, Ben Affleck Batman. Although I don't know if he wants to make any more of those or if there's any plans.
I think this was the movie that he dropped out of. Like, I think this was the one that he was going to direct or something. Well, I mean, Batfleck went through a weird chain of events where, like, there was going to be a standalone Batfleck movie and then it turned into Affleck maybe directing it and then it turned into Affleck walking away from it. And, like, I think this was the kind of ultimate genesis of what was supposed to be a standalone Batman movie in that universe that they set up with the Justice League.
Yeah. Well, I will be the first to report then and say I was kind of surprised by how much I enjoyed this Batman movie.
Yeah. I liked it too. I mean, I think what was the hook for you?
Like what finally brought me over?
Yeah, like what exactly? Like what stood out that kind of surprised you into, you know, being positive on it?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that the movie fully earns its 3-hour runtime, but I think it gets pretty close. Like, it really lets you sit and experience the arc with all of the characters. Like, those 3 hours, I don't think are entirely wasted.
Agreed,
And I think a lot of what drove me and was most interesting is we get to see a lot of Batman... not just running around punching people's face, right? Like, the Riddler as a villain, I think, is a really interesting one.
Yeah.
And I think that they use him well. Now, there are elements to the Riddler's riddles that I'm like, well, come on, Bat. I mean, you're the world's greatest detective. Not to, you know, take the Penguin's line out of the movie, but I expected better of Batman, right?
Yeah.
But I think it works. I think Paul Dano is awesome as the Riddler. He just chews scenery. Colin Farrell in a fat suit works incredibly well as the Penguin. You know, I like Robert Pattinson too. I think the sort of emo version of, you know, Batman goes and fights crime and then comes home and does some journaling is funny on paper, but I think it kind of works because this is a version of Batman where he hasn't quite figured out who he is as a hero and carries with him a lot of trauma. And it feels like a story that we would see of Batman in reverse, right? Like something that we would see in like Arkham Asylum, for example, is one of my favorite Batman stories because it really leans into the idea of Bruce Wayne being someone that is not altogether there.
Yeah.
And this is a movie where it's almost like we've skipped the origin story of him putting on a suit and we've gone to the origin story of him being a hero, right?
Becoming a professional Batman.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, but because when the movie starts, he's been doing Batman activities for 2 years, but he hasn't made any progress, right? The city's not better. Yeah. And I think for me, one of the reasons I find Batman as a character so interesting is he is a superhero who endures, right?
Yeah.
He is someone that is willing to stick it out for his city in a way that doesn't, I mean, yes, he's been involved in like big, huge story arcs.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, he's the hero of Gotham, and he will be there through it, through thick and thin, through all those sort of dark elements, right?
Perhaps you might say the hero it deserves.
For sure. Or, you know, another example of a comic book, Batman comic I love is Kingdom Come, right? Mm. We've got a Batman who's in his old age, and he's curmudgeonly, and he hasn't changed much, and he's stubborn, but he has endured through a lot of dramatic changes.
Yeah.
Of like what is coming through superheroes, right? Like the reason, and I love the idea that if no one else could defeat Superman, if Superman ever goes evil, Batman is the one who can do it.
Yeah.
To me, it feels so true and right because he is someone that is purely human. Yes, he's got a bunch of cool gadgets, but he's got no superpowers.
Yeah.
And he just fucking endures. Like he just is committed to his shtick, if you will, you know, like to a huge degree. And I think watching someone do that and become that in this film is kind of an interesting arc to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that I'm generally a DC apologist in terms of their cinematic universe where it's like, I fully admit that they make a lot of mistakes, but they do take big swings and they do interesting things with the characters. Whereas I think the Marvel stuff is more, it's way more polished and way better put together, but it's also way more predictable where it's like, oh yeah, I know this is, of course this is how this is going to go, you know?
Yeah. It's not quite as sincere.
Yeah. But I mean, that was one of those, like, you know, the Batman v Superman movie, that clip with when Batflick says, if there's even a 1% chance that Superman goes rogue, we have to be ready to kill him. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly what Batman, because Batman's always thinking about the contingencies. Like, what are all the angles? And we need to be prepped for all of the angles.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool in this movie where you start to kind of see that put together and you start to, you see not only his, like, you know, the way that he approaches it, but also, you know, the transition, you know, like we made the joke at the top of the show about, he goes from just being vengeance to something more. And it's like, he learns that over the course. It was like, oh, it's not good enough just to like beat up a bunch of thugs every night. Like I have to do something different.
It's a gradual lesson too, right? Like there's not, to me, it doesn't feel like there's this I mean, there is a triumphant moment at the end of the film and we can talk about it in like sort of spoilery section, but it feels as though it's building towards that in a very natural way through that admittedly 3 hour long runtime. You know?
Yeah. One of the reasons why I brought this up in the first place was we've had so much Batman, but just across other media as well. And I feel like taking movies to the side for a second, I feel like some of the most influential Batman stuff has actually come from video games over the past 10 plus years or so, especially with the Arkham games. And so I remember I was like trying to not give away too much to you, but I was like, when I was watching this movie, I was like, wow, like, those Arkham games were influential. Like, so did you kind of see what I was saying when I was like referencing that? Yeah.
Well, I mean, certainly in terms of the action, and you know, the action I think is really effective in this Batman version, but there is a lot of just brutal melee combat, but it's also like contextual. Like there's a fight scene where he goes into a club. Or even the first fight scene where he's in a subway and he's being attacked by like Joker goons, right? Yeah. They don't wait. Like they're all coming at him at once, you know? And they're attacking him with like pipes and stuff, and he blocks it and then uses the pipe, and he's using the environment around him.
Yeah.
And a lot of the film is shot, those action sequences are shot in quite close up. Like it really feels like you're in that close physical combat. And he does what you would expect in one of the Arkham video games, right?
Like he's like flipping around, like kind of parrying left and right, like doing all kinds of stuff.
And he's like being aware. Like it's almost like you could see the little blue lightning bolts you know, that the game has. Because like he's attacking someone and then he quickly turns and blocks another attack and then goes back to the first guy to finish him off. And then, you know, back and forth like that, which is super, super cool. The other thing that I thought was hilarious, and this is especially true at the end when we see like Riddler goons, but I never thought in a movie I would see this idea that your lackeys dress like you.
Yes.
You know, it's such a weird, it's like if everyone, I don't, maybe this is true, if everyone who's like a Bieber fan dressed exactly like Justin Bieber, you know?
Just like, oh man, Batman versus Bieber, what a comic book series.
Finally, the conflict we've been waiting for.
The Bat versus the Biebs.
It's such a funny idea. And, you know, in a weird way, I think the Arkham games, it's ridiculous. It's a little ludicrous, right? Like that everyone does that. And it's partly because the city is just so chock full of enemies. Like you beat up how many Joker goons and how many, you know, these goons all over the place. You're just beating so many of them up that it feels like the city is just stupid with criminals that are willing to wear makeup, right? Yeah. Which is shocking. I think in this case, it's used a bit more seriously and a bit more, in a way that's a bit more scary, right? Like the idea of... Yeah. The Riddler goons are like, I mean, it's basically like an incel army that he puts together within the context of the film. And I think that idea becomes a little bit scarier, right? Yeah. I think it takes the that video game idea, but rather than sort of highlighting how ludicrous it kind of is, it kind of leans into a far scarier idea, which is, you know, people will use these people as symbols for malevolence.
Yeah. I mean, I like that part of the movie quite a bit, and that was one of the gamey versions of the movie where you have all of these Riddler goons, and but they up the ante. It's like, oh shit, now they have shotguns, and like that's exactly how things would escalate, like in a game, you know, like or like, oh, this is the sniper variant, but like they're all of the like Riddler people, but I like that quite a bit because they, again, they didn't do it in a super obvious way, but it was clearly it was a core part of the story of internet subcultures and, you know, what it is to have lonely, disaffected people. And, you know, Riddler is like a low key streamer, you know, in this movie where like he has a group of 500 people basically that just kind of follow him on Twitch or whatever their equivalent is.
Yeah.
And I thought, but they didn't overuse it. Whereas like, I mean, and I'll preface this by saying I love the movie, but like, In the Matrix 4, it was just bludgeoning you over the head with the allegory. It's like, get it? It's the internet attacking them. And it's like, I get it. But like this one, it was much more subtle. And
there's a lot of visual language that they use to convey the themes rather than just telling you.
Exactly. And it's a smaller scale. Like it was like, oh, this guy is... It's more chilling because it is more true to life. Like they were like, whoa, this guy has had 500 people watch. And we both know that like... 500 people watching a stream is, it's not nothing, but it's still, you know, you're a nobody, you know, but like 500 people all with guns in a coordinated attack is a very scary thing. So it made it seem even more realistic in a weird way.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. I also really like that the fundamental idea of what is scary in this film or what has sort of caused so much damage is this complete failure of trust, right? Like there's no one to trust in this film. There's no one to believe in the city. And, you know, in this version of Gotham, you know, everyone's correct. And Falcone is, you know, like the secret mayor of Gotham or whatever.
Also,
and
John Turturro, what a delight.
Dude, Irv from Severance, man.
John Turturro. That man's on fire. What an agent he has.
In this movie, actually. I think Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman was awesome as well.
Yeah.
Although, man, shout out to Michelle Pfeiffer because that transition in Batman Returns is top 10 moments for me.
I mean, just side note on the Batman Catwoman stuff, like that stuff can get so cheesy so fast, and I actually thought that they did a pretty good job with it. You know, you're it is extremely hard to have two people in fucking cat mask and bat mask making out and have it not be idiotic, you know? And it's they basically did it in this one, which was good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to the trust idea, right, is like, you know, even Catwoman and him, like, it their connection kind of makes more sense because it's not this ham-fisted, we both wore masks and that's why we love each other. Like, they're both kind of dealing with father issues, you know, and like trust issues. And so there is a connection there that they don't even vocalize per se, but I think you buy a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that lack of distrust of their parents kind of extends upwards towards failure, you know, lacking of trust in the police, which is something that we deal with, and lacking trust in governance and democracy and like all these other elements that I think are real important themes in today's world that I think this film kind of explores in an interesting way. I thought that was a really effective way of going about it. And like other Batman stories, there's relevance to the experience that we have today. It's just writ large, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think Batman is, by definition, a problematic character, right? Like, he is someone that is...
I mean, he's literally a vigilante, so it's like...
Yeah, literally, you know, a vigilante. Yeah. And a rich billionaire vigilante, no less, right? Like, there's a lot of issues with him just going around just beating people up. I mean, hell, the movie opens up with what looks to be an anti-Asian hate crime in a subway. Yeah. It is a very politically charged, this film. And I think that they still managed to do it with some degree of tact because...
Yeah.
You can't get away from the fact that in many stories of Batman, like he is kind of a fascist character, right? Who wants to exert his will, which takes the form of violence on the world. And I think when you are brought into like a really gritty world like this one and like previous Batman movies, Snyder's films included, my concern is always one in which, and I think this is true of the Nolan films as well, there's very little hope. Like there's very little good to the world.
Yeah,
and I think this one manages to walk that line of it has its cake and eats it too, because that is true. Like there is very little good in this version of Gotham.
Yeah,
but getting to the point where Batman gets at the end is kind of the point of like, well, we do need people that can stand out from above it, right? We get a kind of tacky scene where Gordon is like, well, not all cops are dirty, and it's like, okay, well, sure, but you know, I think Batman's arc itself works really well.
Yeah, I think like those, and again, this is another thing that made me think of those Arkham games. They're willing to slow, and again, this goes back to the 3-hour runtime, but like they're willing to slow the movie down multiple times, where Batman is just figuring out, you know, where all the clues are in this room, or there's like extremely tense scenes where he's walking around and police officers are like, what the fuck is this guy doing here? You know, like that sort of like there's like a tenseness to a lot of the scenes that they let sit for a while that I thought was really good. It's not just like bang, bang explosions for 2.5 hours. And so like it does slow the movie down, but it does make it more like, oh, this is an actual person, not just a, you know, bombastic superhero. You know, this is someone that's also like, you know, has to figure it out like everyone else is figuring it out, which I liked because like that was the trick that they were able to do with those games, where there were times in those games where you weren't beating people up. You were like searching for all those fucking Riddler clues, or you were kind of finding things in the environment, or, using the detective vision, all that stuff. Even the detective vision, I thought was like, oh, like, this is a really clever, like Batman wears those like high tech contact lenses that, you know, records everything.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh,
your power source and
the power source is in his suit, probably in the crotch area, I would imagine.
Sure.
But I mean, actually, no, because
Zoe Kravitz wears them.
That's true, huh? I mean,
what threw me off the most is Catwoman wears them and then she never blinks.
Well, I mean, you know, she's gotta get footage.
On that note, actually, I'm kind of interested to hear your thoughts on the use of tech, because it feels like Batman versions of Batman go back and forth on this, right?
Yeah.
Even the first Arkham Asylum sort of was limited, and then the second Rocksteady Batman game started jumping the shark with the Batmobile sequences and a lot of this like forced tech stuff.
That Arkham City one was like the most extreme, where it was like so the Batmobile extreme. Was like drive up buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah, like it's crazy. And I get it, right? Because there are versions of Batman where Batman is basically an inventor. Like he's just inventing shit left and right. He's like a genius, right? Which is fine, I guess, to some extent. But this film has one piece of tech, which is the eye recording, and then kind of ignores all the others. I mean, yes, there's a Batarang, but it's not really used much. Yeah. I mean, he uses it to like cut rope. He has a car, but unlike a lot of past Batman films, the Batmobile is not something that is fetishistic. This isn't this
huge... it's just like a souped up El Camino or something.
It's got like a fucking jet engine in the back, but it looks like someone just took a jet engine and attached it to a fucking Trans Am and was like, go to town, you know?
Does look like something that you'd find like parked outside of the 7-Eleven.
I mean, even the way that the action is shot, right? Like there's the scene where he's chasing the Penguin and he bursts through the fire, and it's entirely filmed through the back of the Penguin's like a car. Like it's not zooming in and showing and extending out. Like Nolan did this. Yeah. Pretty much every single major Batman film has fucking fetishized his Batmobile to such a degree. And I find it really uninteresting. And it becomes its own thing. Like, people comment or wait, like, Batman vehicle spoilers is, like, a thing.
Yeah, what will it look like? Yeah,
and there's a part of me that really loves reining a lot of the sort of bat tech in.
Yeah.
In a way that it makes it far more believable and can focus on the character as a detective and as, like, as a fighter rather than someone that is leaning on his billionaire wealth in the way that we would see someone like Tony Stark do it. And I think video games are in a hard position because, I mean, maybe we can get to this now, but like, I think one of the lessons I would want a video game publisher or developer to learn from this Batman is that we don't need all those gadgets. We don't need all of that tech. Like, the challenges mechanically you do, right? So like, how do you divorce that, right? How do you have a Batman that isn't a rich billionaire with just a stupid amount of gadgets and then still have someone that is mechanically interesting and develops as the game goes on? And I think we lean on tech to do that.
Well, I think that's why I think both of us like the first Arkham game the best, probably, because it is the most reined in. I mean, you still have crazy things like remote control batarangs and, you know, like, other stuff. But like, I would say
drones.
You don't have like an autonomous, you know, tank or whatever that you're like that can turn into a plane. Like, I think the most interesting thing in that game was the detective vision, and they literally called it detective vision, and it's a logical extension of how Batman as a mortal would act, where it's like, okay, what is my superpower? My superpower is that I'm super smart and I'm super rich. So how will I leverage that superpower? Well, I can just enhance my already, you know, good detective abilities by, like, of course, like, the world's greatest detective would be recording everything 24/7 because anything could be a clue. And so, like, it's a logical thing versus, like, it's a lot less logical when, like, Batman has a laser gun or something. You know, it's like, all right, like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But, like, I think that, again, that reminded me a lot of the Arkham games, where it's like, okay, the tech, especially in that first Arkham game, made a lot more sense when you think about it as a logical extension of what Batman's special power is, which is he's smart and rich. And, you know, like that's what it would look like. And so I thought that the Pattinson version, it was smart that they did that, where it's like, what would he do if he was first starting out? Like, he would make himself stronger and he'd make his perception of the world better. And that's exactly what they did, you know, I thought it worked pretty well.
It kind of reminds me of the Batman VR game. Did you ever play that, Arkham VR?
No, I watched people play it, but I never got to play it myself.
That one's actually a good one as well, because again, because you're in VR, right, you're limited, you don't have like a ton of combat, you're limited to that detective experience.
Yeah.
And yes, he is tech, he makes like holograms, and he's got like, you know, x-ray vision and stuff, but... Again, I think that idea of him as a detective is a really interesting and compelling one, you know?
Yeah. And you know, he uses it not to, like, he doesn't use it to, like, automatically solve the puzzles. He uses it to go home to the Batcave and start, like, doing a cipher with Alfred. You know, like, he's just doing grunt work but using tech to expedite it. So, like, it makes sense in that way versus having a, you know, a Jarvis just kind of do everything for you.
Side note, because since you mentioned Batcave, I love the Batcave being a closed down subway station, because I'm not distracted by how are people not watching this dude bring in a bunch of fucking tech into this fucking cave in the middle of nowhere, you know?
I mean, I think that that stuff, there's a lot of clever things around, like how they set up the world and you know, what all of that, what all that version of Gotham, I think, is pretty clever. Let's see what else. How about the villains? Like, how did you feel about the adversaries?
I really like Paul Dano again as the Riddler, and I think that the Riddler is misused in the Arkham games, because the Riddler is the avenue in those games to convey to you puzzles, like in-world, like optional puzzles. I don't recall, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure in every single one of the Rocksteady video games, the Riddler are the sort of optional things that you encounter throughout the game. And it never crescendos into its own story. There's not really, I mean, maybe there's a story there, but it's not its own thing, right?
Yeah.
In Arkham City, you get portions of the city that are like the Joker-dominated portion of the city, and it seems themed for that area, and that's kind of a cool version of what it might look like had they taken over. And we never get that for the Riddler. We get these like kind of like one-off things. I think that the Riddler can absolutely carry a Batman adventure, because of all of his villains, he's the one that is smarter than him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he messes up in some ways. Like, there's a hubris or there's biases, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
So, I'll just say spoilers for the Batman.
Yes.
But there's that moment in this one where Paul Dano's Riddler, you think he's going to reveal that he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Yes.
But he misses it, right? Like, he misses that piece of the puzzle. And Batman was... did the same thing. Right? He missed a key aspect of the Riddler's puzzle. And I think that doubling is really, really effective. And it's such a cool idea of using the Riddler in that way. And I think that idea of, you know, having to navigate those spaces and being put in scenarios where it feels like he doesn't have all of the pieces, I think is just super compelling. To me, that's far more interesting than, you know, the Penguin being the main bad guy and then it's just a bunch of thugs, or the mobsters being the bad guys and it's just a bunch of thugs, you know?
Yeah, because then it's just a simple it's a more simple corruption story versus, you know, some sort of you know, psychological arc between the two of them. It's also kind of nice that they deviate from the Joker, because the Joker is the, you know, the classic, you know, one of the greatest villains ever created, right? And so, like, it's tempting. Everyone wants to try the Joker story, because it's like it has become like, you know, one of the great American challenges of like, can I make the best Joker, you know?
And there's a lot of great Jokers.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of like playing Hamlet, you know? It's like everyone wants a crack at it. You know, it's like, oh, can I be the Joker this time? And it's like,
can I be Mr. J?
Yeah. I mean, it's they don't get away from it. They can't escape it completely. And they do a throwaway in there. But I mean, it's cool because the Riddler is an inherently slower, quieter, more cerebral take on it. And they go for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about that same thing too, with the games, where like those games are fully focused on the Joker by the end. I mean, because by the end, you know, the Joker is like inhabiting Batman's psyche and stuff like that. And so I think it was cool they deviated from that a little bit, because there's just been so much of that, especially, you know, in all kinds of comics.
I mean, when you have access to Mark Hamill, though, you don't waste it, you know?
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, again, you know, one of the great American roles, weirdly enough, has become the Joker. So, like, I totally get why you'd want to take a swing at it, but it's nice to try something different and not to. And if you think about it, like, the last time the Riddler was on screen, it was Jim Carrey. And so they did, like, such a different take on you know, what it was.
Yeah. You know, what I'll say about this version of the Riddler as well is that I want to differentiate the idea of Batman facing off the Riddler being interesting because the Riddler is only smarter than him, and that riddles are hard and kind of fun to do, right? Like, we all love Die Hard with a Vengeance. Like, riddles are cool, right?
I did really like the thumb drive thing. I thought that was very
funny. Thumb drive was very good.
I laughed at that. Yeah,
it was very, very good. But, you know, one of the when you're talking about the Joker in the video games, one of the villains I really liked in the Rocksteady games was Scarecrow. Because yeah. when he would put you in a hallucination environment, not only was the environment cool, but the environment was preying upon Batman's own psychoses, right?
Yeah.
It gave
yeah.
us an opportunity to look into what makes Batman tick and his concerns yeah. and his fears that he's making things worse, that Robin's death is his fault, and, you know, like, stuff like that yeah. is some juicy goodness that mm-hmm. the Scarecrow allows us to get into.
Yeah.
What made this Riddler so compelling wasn't just that he was smart, but it's that he was right, right? Like, the stuff yeah. that he was going after, like, the things he was trying to reveal to yeah. Batman about the city, about corruption, about Bruce Wayne's parents was compelling. Like, that was yeah. the cool stuff. And he was using Batman for his own ends, right? Yeah. And so it allowed us to learn about Batman through that process. I think that's the key takeaway, right?
Yeah.
The Joker has done that in past Batman video games and past Batman stories, yeah. right? Arkham Asylum, I love that comic book, and it leans mm-hmm. on the Joker exploiting Batman's psychotic nature in a way, yeah. right? I think all yeah. of those types of storytelling beats can be really compelling. You just have to choose the right villain who can help explore what makes Batman an interesting character, rather than just someone that has leverage over him or can fight yeah. him in another way, right? Like, the same for Two-Face, right? Harvey Dent as a villain is interesting because of his pre-existing relationship to Batman, not yeah. because he's Two-Face.
Well, and also Batman himself sees it as his failure. Like, he couldn't prevent Dent yes. from, you know, going down this path, which means that, like, oh, can I not prevent Gotham from going the same way? Like, Two-Face is a living entity of, like, what Batman fears the most about, you know, what could happen to Gotham. So it's right. like, it's just a better metaphor. Did you watch the deleted scene with the Joker in it?
No. I didn't even know I could. Oh, is it you mean the one where he's in the prison?
Yes. So there's okay. a kind of a, like, Silence of the Lambs type
scene. It's not deleted, though, right? That's just in the movie.
No, there's an extended deleted scene that they released. Okay. Like, they officially, they officially released the studio released the deleted scene just for interest's sake, I guess, where there's an actual scene with Batman and the Joker where he goes to the Joker kind of like in a Hannibal Lecter style way to, like, try to figure out who the Riddler is. And it is kind of interesting because, you know, the Joker is stuck in Arkham and just kind of fucking with Batman the whole time, but, you know, calls out why Batman is so disturbed by, you know, by the Riddler and, like, what it represents and stuff. So there is something interesting. I think they cut it for time, I guess, but I think it actually makes the movie a little bit better in retrospect, and it's not as... That last scene with the Joker and the Riddler was, like, fine, but it was kind of random in my opinion. And it's less random if you watch that scene.
Yeah. It also kind of sapped the energy from the Riddler. Because I think Paul Dano's character, I mean, especially when he's wearing his mask, is just so good.
But. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if you get a chance, it's, you know, it's a short scene. It's like a 5-minute scene or something, but it is just a one-on-one scene where Batman is talking with a Joker who is imprisoned, but still kind of pulling some strings behind the scenes to, you know, fuck around with Batman.
Yeah. Are there any other lessons that you would like to see in video games or aspects of the film that you think would work well in a video game space?
I feel like maybe it's just the snake eating its own tail, but I feel like the stripped down nature of, you know, what still an action oriented story, but we don't need to have, like, you know, mobile tank, you know, we don't have to have yeah. like, you know, collect these 1,000, you know, circuit boards or whatever to, like, open up a new storyline. Like, it would be kind of cool to have a more, like, you know, what if you had, and again, I wouldn't even want it this long, but, like, what if you had, like, you know, Naughty Dog's take on Batman, yeah. you know? An action-oriented but still kind of, like, storytelling type of thing where you actually do think about the character versus, you know, having just it be an open world, you know, collect-a-thon. Like, I thought that stuff was really cool. I thought that, like, I actually don't know how much the video games have gone into angles like Catwoman or Alfred or any of the other kind of side characters that aren't villains, you know. Yeah, it would be interesting to explore those types of relationships.
Dude, give me a Alfred video game. I'm just like, I mean, folding Bruce Wayne's laundry and like
folding his laundry, but then also like pulling out like a knife and, you know, your RAF knife or whatever, and like fighting some dudes on the side. Like,
yeah, man, I kind of wish it was more Alfred actually in the movie, because I love Andy Serkis so much.
Oh, man, he's great. Well, and that too, like, you know, you can sense in some of those scenes, you know, his guilt as well, and mm-hmm. you know, his ambiguous feelings as to what Bruce Wayne is doing, but still having to support him because he feels like he messed up on, you know, his parents. So
yeah,
like that stuff is cool. I don't know if people will necessarily pick up on it if they haven't played the games, or they haven't played the games a lot, but like I really did feel like, especially those earlier Arkham games did have some influence there in like what a kind of like more grounded Batman could be.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool to see that stuff represented in a huge movie that I think pulled it off for the most part.
Yeah. Regarding the side characters too, I really enjoyed, especially in those early games when you get to play as Catwoman, like they were always kind of fun, different ways of interacting with the environment. I think that's a really cool way of mixing up the mechanics by being able to add in some of these allies, right, that work differently. Being able to play as Robin, and there's like another character, right, you can play as temporarily, maybe it's just a suit change.
It might have been Nightwing or something.
Yeah, I forget. Nightwing.
Yeah.
I do think that from a character perspective, though, like we definitely should be exploring some of that stuff more. I think Catwoman is hard. Really, any of the women characters are hard, right? Because Batman has especially grittiness in film and comic books in particular is just so often sexual violence when it comes to women, right? Like Barbara Gordon in The Killing Joke is just like sexually abused, right? Yeah. In order to further the drama around Batman and Commissioner Gordon, right?
Yeah.
That, and it's ugly and it's gross. And that too often when we have like a sort of gritty world, that's the case. I think this film walks the line a little bit. I think there's a lot of that sexually tinged violence that Catwoman experiences, but she does have her own agency, and the conflict with her father is there and interesting.
Well, it's also grounded in known societal dynamics, you know, like it feels a little bit more earned, where it's like like this is kind of how sometimes things go down, and it's not just like, it's not like fridging for the sake of fridging, you know. It's like, okay, like this does feel organic to the world, you know, that and then also Catwoman does make her own choices, so it redeems that a little bit
for sure. And I think that's in the video game space, do it, dude. Like we don't have to, especially because video games are so fucking long, you know, like we're playing these Batman games for like 40, 50 hours, you know, Elden Ring's 100 hours. Like if you make a Batman game that is big, and you want to, because it's Gotham, we got to show multiple biomes or whatever the fuck, like take your time with these other characters. I think it's more than reasonable to say, let's have a whole sequence where you're just playing as them, right? In Spider-Man, being able to play as Miles Morales was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like those sequences were cool, and it was far cooler to then just get a Miles Morales game. Like if the next Spider-Man combines it, I can play as Miles sometimes, and I'll play as Peter sometimes, and they have their own story, and sometimes they interact, and you know, like there's really cool storytelling things that we can do, and we're allowed to fully inhabit someone for an extended period of time.
Now I'm imagining the Elden Ring character creator, but it's Batman, so you get to decide how thick the eyeliner is.
I'm sure you can fucking make a Batman in those in those ones, but it looks like an actual human bat is the terrifying problem.
That's a tarnished bat.
Yeah. I mean, there are those bad people in the game. So.
Oh, man, the singing ones.
Yeah.
That's where Batman took his... that's where Batman took his inspiration from, the terrifying fucking... Yeah. Demi human bats.
Dude, speaking of wings, like even his wingsuit doesn't feel like the classy wingsuit you would see in so many other Batman movies.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like he got it at, you know, Big Five Sporting Goods or whatever.
And it looks like he's only ever done it a few times. Like he's too busy fighting crimes to practice. Like he did not look like he had good control over that bat wing suit.
Well, and when he tried to land, he like totally biffed it and like smashed his face into the top of the bridge and stuff.
Oh yeah,
like
I mean he 100% would have died. Yeah.
Well, a fun movie, and fun to see like some subtle nods to the video game influence in there. It was cool to see. We'll leave it there for this week, though. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is the Batcave. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, give us a listen. Listen to some past episodes. Share with a friend.
Just turn on the signal. Look to the sky.
Turn on the bat signal, yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time